About 30 minutes, would that be good?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, that's right. I did an interview with Bob Feller, and he can talk faster than anyone I've ever spoken to.
Yeah. He's a good talker.
Incredible. I only asked about 3 questions because I couldn't get a word in. Anyway, when I mentioned Manhattan, I guess you had your experience with Manhattan coming from Orange, New Jersey, and also with the Newark Eagles and then the New York Giants. Do you remember Manhattan in 1945 when the war ended? Do you have any
I was in service from March of 43 until September of 45. So I only remember a little after I got back. I remember immediately after I got back.
What was it like when you came back? Did you come to Manhattan?
good night out, I want to take your wife out, or your girlfriend or something, we'd always, go to Sugar Ray's bar. He had a bar. Sugar Ray Robinson. A popular bar.
Where was that?
7th Avenue. Seventh Avenue, I think it was 124th Street. Very, very popular. And
so that was Harlem.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And of course, the famous Teresa Hotel was right there.
Right.
They had a bar, restaurant, and people from out of town used to, they didn't stay downtown at that time. They stayed right there at the Teresa Hotel.
So the point that you're making, Monty, is that there really was this uptown and this downtown that probably doesn't exist anymore.
Because
it got dangerous and it changed, but I think back then it was an area that people, of all races went to.
People from Europe, when they would come, they stayed at a hotel maybe downtown, but they would always want to come up and see what Harlem was like. They heard this, wonderful music, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, and all the rest, and they wanted to see what it was like.
But you had told me that you wanted to be a saxophonist.
Yeah.
Right. And then.
When I was younger.
Yeah, when you were a kid.
When I was coming along, because of Lester Young was a famous tenor saxophone player, and I don't know, maybe you've never heard of him.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, he was very popular and had a cool, easy style, and I used to like the way he used to play the saxophone. So I asked my mother if I could. She'd loan me $5, so I could pay down on this saxophone. Well, on the way to the music store, I had to pass by the baseball store first. It had a chain of sporting goods stores by the name of Dominguez. You ever heard of Dominguez?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it had a big store, a sporting goods store, and in the store there was a mitt, and the mitt was $5. I could purchase the mitt for $5. So instead of going and paying down on the saxophone, I went into the Vegas and bought the mitt so I could catch my brother in the driveway, at the house where we lived. And so consequently, I became I used to pitch because I had a very strong arm, and then later on your arm would get sore, you have to stay. You couldn't throw very well, 3 or 4 days, so I wanted to play every day, so I became a catcher. And my brother was, very, as fast as anybody, he could throw the ball hard as anybody that ever lived. In fact, he broke my finger, because I couldn't get the mitt up in time. That's how hard he threw. And so I became a catcher for a long time. And sometimes I would pitch and he would catch, and I would catch and he would pitch.
But the music interest stayed with you through later years, and when you went up to Harlem.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Any musician that you recall from that time?
Well, we're very partial to Billy Eckstein.
Mm-hmm. I met him actually once.
Eckstine.
Right. He was wonderful.
Yeah, Billy Eckstein and Count Basie and Duke Ellington, because we had met these fellows. They were great baseball fans.
Mm-hmm.
And
they throw out the first ball.
Throw out the first ball. And like I said, Basie, he had a bar and restaurant there, and we used to go in there and we'd meet him and talk to him. And we used to see him. Particularly when we were down south, they would probably stay at the same hotel that we were staying. When they were barnstorming.
Mm-hmm.
And so we developed a rapport with them. So it was wonderful. And they were sometimes these clubs now. I think. At that time, all of the bars closed like at 4 o'clock. Well, they had these after-hour spots that opened up like 1 minute after 4. And we'd go there and then finish out the night. Nobody's ready to go home yet,
Wow.
Yeah. So it was just a great time. Sinatra was, had just come into his own. And then, he had Glenn, I don't think Glenn Miller was on the scene there, but there was Harry James. And then there was Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and all these wonderful, wonderful people, would hang out there. Even Joe Louis, particularly Joe Louis.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big
baseball fan.
Fan and jazz fan.
Mm-hmm.
And Sugar Ray, same thing. Sugar Ray, he kind of prided himself in the fact that he could sing a little. you know, he's a pretty good dancer, too. So he went on the circuit, baby, you know, for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And,
You didn't spend much time then in what they call downtown, like midtown Manhattan?
No, not too much.
Mm-hmm.
We might go down, we'd go down to Birdland. That was afterwards, too. That was after the war.
Right.
Birdland.
Yeah, in the village. And it was in the village or midtown?
Birdland was midtown on 7th Avenue, around 52nd Street. And then there was the Blue Note downtown in the village.
Right.
And, you know, jazz clubs all over the place. And this is where we would hang out.
Right. You know, do you remember any player from the Eagles that you hung out with or that you went with?
Singing. used to have a bar and restaurant. That's where a lot of the players stayed. I know the Giants stayed there. You know.
Where was that?
That's on the corner of let's see, 57th Street and there's 8th. Wait, what's the next street over? Right on the corner. Right on the corner.
Broadway?
No, Broadway. No, over from Broadway. One over from Broadway.
8th Avenue, 7th Avenue.
Going.
Madison. Yeah.
No, going the other way.
Oh.
Going the other way. No, 9th.
Or 9th Avenue. Right. Yeah.
9th Avenue and 57th Street. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very, very popular because
so a lot of the Giants used to stay live there.
Yeah, and a lot of the Giant baseball players and a lot of the Giant football players.
Mm-hmm.
There was trying to think of the that great defensive back that the Giants had, the black guy. Who died, about at age 50. But,
I don't recall who he is.
Well, he'll come to me.
Right. But anyway, so you, did you live there too, or you lived in New Jersey?
No, I stayed at home in Dobie Newcomb. And they stayed in Joe Black, of course, and Jackie. They lived in, one lived in Brooklyn, one lived in Long Island. Of course,
right.
A number of us lived in Long Island.
Yeah.
So, no, we didn't stay at the hotel. We stay at our homes and we get together and go over in the car or something and enjoy ourselves. But it was a wonderful, wonderful time. And
what was the Polo Grounds like for you after having, played in the Negro Leagues, I guess, for about a decade? Do you remember the first game you played as a New York Giant?
Yeah, very spacious. You had to get used to the angles. It's more like a polo, ground. Polo field.
Right.
Like a baseball field. You had to get used to things.
Do you remember your first game there at all?
Well, I think I pinched it, I think, the first time. I pinched it against the Dodgers by a pitcher by the name of Joe Hatton, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on deck, I remember, and Leo said, come on, get a bat. He said, you're going to pitch it, regardless of what the next batter does. So I was in the batting circle, and my leg started, my knee started to tremble a little bit, and I couldn't believe this was happening to me because
you were
almost 31 years old,
right? And you had been,
in the Negro League 10 years,
and you'd been a star.
Yeah, and so it just happened, and I didn't know the reason why, but anyhow, I walked. But I was glad to get on base, I remember, because I couldn't understand all the, being nervous since I, was no veteran.
Right. Did you think that you were in Manhattan? When we talk about the Polo Grounds or we talk about Harlem, was that Manhattan to you or not Manhattan?
Yeah. Well, of course, it's right on the tip of, it's like, Washington Heights. But,
But it's Manhattan. It's not the Bronx.
No, Manhattan.
Yeah, so it was Manhattan.
Yeah.
And DeRosa was kind of a Manhattan guy or kind of a guy who had a lot of contacts. Did you ever go out with him at all or you didn't bother with him because he was the manager?
No, we wouldn't hang out with Leo. What we would do, though, he lived in Midtown. I think he lived on the east side, I believe. Around 4th Street, 75th Street, and there someplace, 3rd Avenue, over that way. Well, and anyhow, he would invite all of these actors, Tony Martin,
Cicerese?
No.
George Raft?
Well, yeah, he I don't think he ever brought George Raft into the clubhouse, but Stuart Granger, Frank Sinatra, Martin Lewis, these kind of guys. And they used to come in and someone would work out with us.
Really?
So we got to, we really enjoyed that because that was probably the only way we could ever get to meet them.
Mm-hmm.
But they used to bring them right in the clubhouse. They stayed for a short time and then they would leave, of course. So.
Did autographs?
No. They didn't ask for autographs, and we didn't ask them for autographs.
That was my next question.
Yeah. You know, because I'm known you. You know, at that time, you just didn't, autographs weren't that popular. Now, for some people. For instance, I like to tell a story. I met, Rogers Hornsby and, what's that great shortstop who played for the Pirates?
Honus Wagner.
Pepper Martin, and other greats.
Right, I guess Dizzy Dean.
That Dizzy?
Yeah.
And never asked for an autograph.
Wow.
You know? And Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson and Buck Lynn, I never did ask them for an autograph. Played with them and against them. Never did ask for an autograph. I wish I had, because, you know, look how valuable that would be now.
Yep.
Or, you know, if I had it just to pass along to my grandchildren.
Yep, sure would.
Wonderful.
Yep.
But never did. And I think that was true not only with the black players, but the white players too. They very rarely ask for an autograph. Or get up to sign a picture or anything, you know.
Yeah.
It just wasn't being done at that time.
Did you ever go to the theater or to any movie houses in Manhattan during that era?
Yeah, I used to go down to Paramount. You know, just go see Sinatra and some of those other great, performers.
And were there any perks that you got as a star for the Giants? You know, anything that you want to talk about, like any suits or any Manhattan experience that you got that was really unusual?
Well, after we became well known, we used to go over there to the trying to think of the name of that place. It was very famous. I think it's still there. It was noted for suits. And they would give us a big break on suits. And, used to advertise on TV very heavily. And I think it's still there.
Barney's?
Barney's. That's it. Barney's. Yeah, they'd give us a big break. And then and that's the same thing in Newark. It was a very famous store by the name of Jack Schwartz. And we'd all try to buy our suits at Jack Schwartz because he'd knock off five or ten bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the players, and most of the players were well built and so on, and he figured if we wore his suit, it'd be good advertising.
Right, you'd make the suit look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make the suit look good. That's true. Yeah. We used to get the perk. Yeah.
Right. Did you ever feel any prejudice in Manhattan? Really? Not from people in Manhattan? You mean there's people in the stands?
No, not in the stands. But, certain places that, at the beginning, I'm talking about like 1946, 47.
Really?
Certain places.
After the war?
Yeah, certain places. It will, ticklish. But, and we found out that, if they weren't friendly, then we would go back. But there were some. There was some still there, some of that feeling still there, but gradually it wore away because, Imlen Tunnell was the guy I was trying to think of. Remember Imlen Tunnell, the great defensive back?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I was going to say that, but I didn't know you meant him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Imlen Tunnell.
Yeah, Imlen.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Imlen Tunnell.
So he was there also.
Yeah, and I think he helped. He was one of the pioneers of breaking the prejudice and the segregation down in Midtown, because he'd go all over with Landry and the other
Summerall?
No, the quarterback
Tittle?
Not Tittle, the other one, before Tittle. They'd go into the he would hang out with them and then later on when we came into the league he'd take us, and it was some of the places we liked, and be treated very well, something because we were in Imlen Tunnell.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of this other place, on the corner of 3rd Avenue and 3rd Avenue and 54th Street. 3rd Avenue and 54th, it's a famous place where they wouldn't built around the building is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Very famous place, great. Very well known for its hamburger.
Oh, is it Walensky's?
Not Walensky. Oh, it's a famous place. I know. When you get away from these, sometimes.
Yeah, because I think we have a little apartment right up the block, so I can look it up. We have a place on 55th and Lex now.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, so we're just. I know where it is. I think I've even eaten in there.
Yeah, well, it was very popular. Food was good. It was reasonable. And that's where all the stars, you know, a lot of movie stars used to come in there. All the great athletes, you know, Gifford. And, Summerall and the rest.
Uh-huh. You and Hank Thompson, though, were the first black players on the Giants.
Yeah, we reported the same date and early in the first week in July, 1949.
Right. And what was it like for you after all those years, you know, being such a great star in high school and then, you know, in New Jersey and then with the Newark Eagles and having seen Robinson, you know, 2 years before break the color line with the Dodgers? What was it like for you being a New York Giant in July of 1949 in Manhattan, the capital really of the world?
Yeah, that's true. Well, it was, first of all, you know, very grateful that it had happened. I was just hoping that, you know, I could make an impact and, you know, succeed, make the team and you know, become someone helpful, not only to my own cause, but to the Giants, you know, help the Giants maybe win a pennant or something. So as time passed, you know, a year or so passed, you know, you get more confident and you can start to go out a little bit more and people would recognize you and you know, you go to a restaurant or go to a jazz session and they'd ask you to stand up and take a bow, you know, that kind of thing.
And they didn't do this when you were on the Newark Eagles in Manhattan?
Just rarely.
Rarely. I guess in Harlem, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here you started, because you really became very famous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would do it downtown later on, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that was a big plus. And we're grateful that it happened. And all we wanted to do is, you know, to continue our success and bigger contribution. And then, of course, when Mays came to our club, you know, and he became famous, and he really made things easier for us all over, you know, uptown, downtown, everywhere, because, you know, he was so popular.
Right. You didn't, you felt good that Mays came along.
Mm-hmm. Very happy. 51.
Right.
Yes. But again, because of his talent and because his performance, much better, you know, for the, you know, the older guys who had, you know, who had been there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He made it really, and you know, he used to get a lot of publicity and you know, they do stories and on him, and, you know, you'd take pictures, and most of the time we'd always be included.
Right, so that really got you, by extension, even more well-known in the area and in baseball.
You know, because I was his roommate, too, see. My name would always be mentioned, which I was very happy about. But see, Jackie had made the big impact, of course, being the first. And then, of course, there was Campanella and Newcomb.
Dobie.
Dobie. And so we had it all to ourselves there for a while, you know. But then as more and more guys started to come into the league, you know, they also was treated, you know, got to be treated royally and got some of the publicity. Notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
And then Satchel Paige, everybody knew about him. He came along, and Jackie came in 47, he and Dobie, and then Satchel came in 48.
Right.
Yeah, you know, with Newcomb and Campanella. So it was wonderful.
Uh-huh. That's an incredible story.
Yeah.
I'm watching the time because I don't want to abuse your time. Actually, went 5 minutes over. Anything I didn't ask you, because again, you're a wonderful interview. Did I get your address last time? I don't know if I did.
Well, let me give it to you now.
Okay, because you'll get a copy of this book, too.
Okay. It's 11 Douglas Court South.
I don't think I got the address. Go ahead.
11 Douglas, D-O-U-G-L-A-S, Court South, in Homosassa, Homosassa, Florida, 34446.
Okay, great.
Go to the phone number.
Right.
When are you leaving for...
Wednesday.
Oh.
still had another 2 years after him till he got to the majors.
Came out with a medical problem,
I didn't realize your story also was so incredible, Monty. It was great. Anything I didn't ask you about the growing up years?
Huh, that's a wonderful little story there. Okay, I'm going to set off the tape.